This is Hades Ham Journal number 8. Hades Ham Journal is the diary of a former techno yuppie fallen on interesting times and guided by fate to a tribe of warehouse squatters called the Home for Aging Mutants, Ham for short. Her new companions are artists, mystics, and political pilgrims who have no use at all for organized society. Occasionally, they do deal with the outside, though. The highly destructive performance trio, Dust to Dust, makes a comeback after 2 years of seclusion, aided by the mysterious CM Cookie Monster, Cartwright. This episode is called All the Way to Hell. Did anybody see what hit me on the back of the head? It must have had some kind of weird shape because I'm seeing M.C. Escher scenarios on the insides of my eyelids whenever I close my eyes. Ooh, I think I'll keep them open right now. Oh, it sure was a great show as far as I could tell. I wish I'd seen the end. A lot of that work was mine, you know. I laid out the plan for where all the explosives would go and I wired them in with my own dishpan hands. Best I ever felt about a project. Sure beat out all those defense contracts I used to do for Rock Hard Munitions. I wonder if anybody saw the end, what with the distraction and all. I hope they at least got it on tape. Am I ready to sit up yet? Nope, not yet. Back to the pillow. You know, last week has been such a blur, it's just as well I'm getting some rest now. Climbing around on the metal and concrete wall sections, getting everything wired up, supervising the move, and believe me, moving anything big with explosive materials attached requires a lot of supervision. Jose and Jose B from the city insurance office kept hanging around, looking through their reams of dog-eared procedures and asking a constant stream of asinine questions with the persistent hope of finding one of their millions of trivial rules that would keep this performance from happening. But, as we are all learning, CM Cartwright gets what he wants. Then Skip, Scotty, and Damian, Dust to Dust their very selves, got a severe case of the pre-performance heebie-jeebies and asked me over and over and over and over and over if I was sure everything would destroy itself as planned. Yes, I said, yes. I've been over the equations and through the schematic and over to grandmother's house and all up and down on these pieces I don't know how many times. I finally put it on tape and just pushed the button to play it back to whichever one was pestering me at the moment. I stole Declan's tape recorder because he'd gotten hold of Wandering Dingleberry's tape and apparently some even worse whiskey than routinely dribbles out the end of the Home for Aging Mutants private still, and he played that tape again and again and again all week. There was no escape. I had to stay in the building to work on the dust-to-dust thing. Look, Declan, I said, trying diplomacy at first. Dan and Ginny gave me some new tapes from Raxowax. You can play some of those if you want. It'd be something different.
Ah, thanks, but no thanks, he replied. The only way to do justice to the obvious genius, the Wandering Dingleberries, is to play them exclusively for at least 6 hours at a stretch.
Oh, I couldn't think of any coherent answer to that. I thought I found some cotton to stick in my ears, but it turned out to be fiberglass insulation, and I decided against it. Then Damian saw it and put it in his mouth and started chewing it.
Great dental floss, he mumbled around the mouthful.
Ew. 2 days later, I hit my thumb, found one of the kids coloring with crayons on the schematic, and dropped the cheeseburger CM that brought me into a pile of sawdust all within 2 hours of waking up. Enough was goddamned enough. Declan, I yelled. If you play the Wandering Dingleberries one more time, I'm going to rip out your entrails and strangle you with them. All I got was a snore. He had fallen asleep and left the tape playing. So I discreetly made off with the tape recorder and left a fresh bottle of whiskey in its place as a peace offering. And that seemed to take care of that. Actually, there was one song on the tape that I liked, partially because it seemed to sort of relate to what we were portraying with the Iron Curtain Unravels project, and the chorus, as far as I could tell, was something about the walls coming down all the way to hell. I was singing it at the performance site when I checked all the detonators after they set up. Bastille was hanging around. Kids are always there at the dumbest times. And yelled, "Hey, you're singing the Wandering Dingleberries! Ha ha ha!" I was stretched pretty tight, I guess. I took a few deep breaths and turned around to count to 10 so I wouldn't fly off the handle at Bastille. She was just being a kid, that was all. The site was pretty interesting once the idea settled in. It had been an empty lot until very recently. Skip, Scotty, and Damian met here 7 years ago while watching the building that used to be here get torn down. Now, about 50 yards behind the bleachers they'd put up for the audience, there was the steel skeleton of a new building being put up. Ha! Wonderful juxtaposition of birth and death, Skip had said. Our wall comes down while their building goes up. Yep. The building construction crew had lots of big machines chugging away, and one of the tallest cranes I'd ever seen, hauling girders up to the top. Ever since I was Bastille's age, I had been awed by really huge machines, wondering how it felt to run one, and not be able to ever, ever make a mistake because any little mistake was going to be a great big mistake. People were starting to show up. CM was handing out hard hats and goggles to everybody. Jose and Jose B had been really disappointed about that because it showed we were concerned with the public safety and they couldn't trash us for that. There was a woman helping him that I didn't know. I started climbing over the dirt clods to go tell Damian everything was ready. "Well, there's our little blast and cap," CM hailed me as I went by. "Come on over here." I hesitated a second and then went over. The woman with him was young, with platinum hair and lots of makeup, dressed all in gray and decked with huge chunks of crinkled silver jewelry. I, on the other hand, was wearing Athena's sweatshirt and Lars's overalls, ornamented with splotches of mud. Sam seemed not to notice. "I'd like you to meet my little sister," he said, "Miss Colby Cartwright."
"Miss, please," she said. "You're so old-fashioned, CM, and I'm 22. I'm not little anymore."
She was very pretty in an ethereal sort of way, but something still reminded me of Ophelia from the Addams Family. "Pleased to meet you," I said politely. "Should be a good show." She was very pretty in an ethereal sort of way, although something about her just reminded me of Ophelia from the Addams Family. "Pleased to meet you," I said politely. "Should be a good show." She was looking past me, though, and her face was changing expression alarmingly. She looked like Captain Ahab catching sight of Moby Dick.
"Who," she asked nobody in particular, "is that?"
I wondered offhandedly if I had looked like that the first time I saw Lars when I ripped the railing out of the wall. I turned around. Well, nobody was even over that direction but Skip, whose mother probably burned his birth certificate to destroy the evidence. "You don't mean him," I said.
"Yes," she breathed, "I do. I've never seen anyone like him."
"Oh, you're lucky," I told her. "That's Skip Lester concept weenie for Dust to Dust. If you're nice to me, I won't introduce you."
"But I want to be introduced, please. He really attracts me."
"You don't understand. This guy's a jerk. If you were drowning, he'd bring you a glass of water. When he was a Boy Scout, he helped little old ladies across the street against the light. The only nice thing he does for us, his housemates, on a regular basis is leave the room."
"Oh, maybe you just don't understand him. Please?"
Colby's eyes were visibly dilated. Her voice shook a little. The damage was done. Only time and disillusionment would heal it now, as I knew all too well. "CM, I'm not responsible for this," I pleaded. "Course not," he replied. "Go ahead, I don't like him much either, but my sister seems to thrive on abuse, and like she said, she's not a little girl anymore. Here." He pulled a cookie out of his vest pocket. "Get a sugar buzz, we start in 5 minutes. "Does CM really stand for Cookie Monster?" I asked Colby as we walked away.
"Uh-huh,"
she said, never taking her eyes off Skip.
"He had it legally changed. We're all sworn to secrecy about what it used to be."
"Colby,"
Skiff guffawed when I introduced her.
"Sounds like a goddamn cheese or something. Whoa, those are the biggest friggin' earrings I ever saw. Them lobes are gonna hang down to your ankles in a year, honey. Well, you got something to say? I ain't got all day, you know."
"Ah,"
she stammered.
I'd like to take you to dinner after the show, if it's all right.
Sure, Cheesecake. Just make sure it's at least 3 stars. An hour from now, I'll be a celebrity. You were wise to get in line early.
Ugh. Well, someday I'll write a book. Boils on the buttocks of humanity and the otherwise reasonable people who love them. But I didn't have time for it right now. We had a wall to blow up. I don't know where they got the background music. It sounded like Wagner on LSD. Everybody got totally caught up in it, though. You kept following the thread even after the choreographed explosions started to drown it out. Wonder if the 1812 Overture premiere was this way. Damian's flying crash test dummies were a hella nice touch. The people in the bleachers were swaying back and forth and back and forth and back. Everything's going as planned, but then out of the blue, I get the feeling that something isn't right. I start to look around, and I notice the bleachers are doing a funny sort of wiggle. Oh, crap, a bolt's probably loose underneath, and if they keep rocking on it, the whole thing will come down. I grab the pliers in my pocket and run underneath to see if I can fix it. One of the supports knocks my hard hat off, but I keep going. I get around behind it where the shaking seems to be coming from, and I start twisting the bolt. But out of something I saw, out of the corner of my eye, I turn around just in time to see the crane crash on top of the scaffold, and the whole thing start to tilt toward us. Jesus! I yell as if he's gonna do anything about it. I climb right up the back of the bleachers, I still don't know how, and I start pushing people down and away from the falling building. Move! I'm yelling. Get down! Run! People are starting to catch on, and then it's a real stampede. I'm worried they're going to run right into the wall that still had a few explosions left to go. And that was the last thing I remember. I don't know where I am now. Probably a hospital. I don't know how I got here, but I'm sure somebody's going to be kind of annoyed when they find out I don't have money or insurance or anything. No bones feel like they're broken. That's good. But my head still feels really, really bad. I think I'll take a nap now. Next time, home sweet ham. I'll be there, unless they find out.